The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
An early end to Early's night may have cost the Red Sox the home opener versus the Athletics, not aided by a limp performance by the bats. They lose 2-1 to the Sacramento A's, falling to 82-69 on the season. My name is Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Jason Kelly and Terry Cushman Jr., and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? Go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. Now, we can start with the lowlights or the highlights. I would just like to give a nice shout out to Connelly Early, who on only 80 pitches pitched 5.1 clean innings and is only attributed with a run thanks to the lackluster is too generous of a word performance by Greg Weissert. Only got one out, two hits, one walk. Ultimately got a run charged to himself, a run charged to Early. And I understand that the kid is new. I understand that there may be calls from upstairs saying, you know, don't stretch him out too much. But I just think you can't pull him in that situation. He was cruising tonight. Seven strikeouts, only five hits. And up until that point, no runs allowed. What did you guys think?
It sucks because I'd love to blame Alex Cora for that because that's, you know, the easy thing to do. That decision was not in his hands. Like, that was purely just the guys in the front office telling him this kid's on a pitch count, no more than this, you know, find the right time and pull him when he's at this amount of pitches. And that's what Cora did. And at the time I saw what Cora saw, which is that he let him face Kurtz because lefty on lefty, he got him out. And then he had Rooker and I forget who the other batter was, another right-hander coming up. So Cora said, all right, that was a good time for me to go to the bullpen. There's two righties coming up. So let's go to Weissert. Problem was, Mark Kotze outsmarted Alex Cora because, yeah, Weissert got Rooker to strike out, and then he pinch hit the other kid with Tyler Soderstrom, who absolutely kills right-handed pitchers. He has all year, and he got to Weissert. So I think Cora sort of underestimated how much Kotze was going to feel like managing at that point because he saw Weissert on the mound and said, yeah, let's get Soderstrom in there because he's, you know, he can burn him, and he absolutely did. So it's tough. Like, Weissert, you know, Middlebrooks made a good point on the broadcast. Like, when you look at his numbers, he's actually been good. Like, going into tonight, his ERA was a tick under three. Like, but when you look at, and he said his biggest problem is that he lets too many inherited runners score. That is 100% true. Greg Weissert has 9 blown saves this year. Now, it's a bit of a wonky stat because he's not in to save it, but it shows you that you can interpret that as 9 times this year, Greg Weissert has given the game away, and the Red Sox haven't been able to come back. And he's a middle reliever. He's not an 8th-inning guy. He's not a 9th-inning guy. He comes in like the 6th inning, maybe the 7th if you're desperate. So for him to have 9 blown saves as a middle reliever, I mean, that inherited runner thing is such a problem for him. And Cora must have known that. Why couldn't you go to somewhere else? Like, how does Zach Kelly do with inherited runners? Is he better? Should he have pitched the 6th inning? Like, so you can still second-guess the manager on that part. But unfortunately, pulling early as he did, that's going to be, we're going to be able to do that for ages with this kid. That's not in Cora's hands. That's the front office, and that sucks.
So I kind of thought we were going to lose tonight. That was my pick. I was like, I think Springs will bounce back and have a better start than he did last time. And I was right. Not the way I thought we would be. I didn't think we were going to put up only one run, which we didn't deserve, by the way. We should have been blanked. Like, that was some bad defense. You know, I think, wasn't it Ref Snyder that came all the way around? And this is a very uninspired baseball team. And they're at 82 wins right now. It's looking like the Texas Rangers will probably lose to the Astros and still be stuck at 79 wins. That's the good news. The bad news is Cleveland has 79 wins now, and we're going to have to babysit them on the scoreboard. So I don't really know what to think here. You do have three games against Tampa, theoretically. Well, we should be in decent shape, but I don't know if Giolito. Yeah, I guess you'll have Crochet and maybe Giolito in that series. So maybe you'll still have two of your decent starters, but they're not showing us anything. They're not. There's no urgency. They're not calling up anyone that could potentially help, which is Christian Campbell. So it's been an ugly month.
Yeah, it really has. And I mean, the story of tonight is the story of all season, 0-for-7 with runners in scoring position. I've been tired of saying it. I mean, it's a pattern at this point. It seems like it's almost in the script for these guys to get guys on second, on third, start out an inning strong, and then blow it. And at the end of the game, they'll lose by one like they did tonight, like they did earlier in the season. And you'll be scratching your head saying, how did that happen? And what would we look like right now in the playoff race if we didn't allow that to happen? You know, you mentioned the Astros. They're winning. Seattle is also winning big tonight. And assuming that both of them win, that means that the standings will remain the same, save for us, meaning we will be down to the third wild card spot. And that means, like you mentioned, both the Guardians and the Rangers are going to be looking for a way to sneak in. It's just a sad state of affairs how the Red Sox's expectations have been diminishing steadily over the course of just a couple of weeks. We went from talking about the division to talking about, well, we'll settle for the first wild card, to now, well, we'll settle for any wild card. But at this point, if we do get into the playoffs, I mean, is this lineup going to come to play? Because I believe in Crochet. I believe in Chapman. I don't know how many of these hitters, I guess Trevor Story, that's about all I believe in right now.
Yeah, Trevor Story weirdly has become your best hitter in that lineup. I mean, I don't think any of us saw that coming. Duran's had a down year. Rafael has been ice cold since the All-Star break. He's really gone downhill. Willie Abreu still can't get in the lineup. Now, supposedly, he's going to make his return maybe tomorrow, but we'll see, because, you know, it's, I feel like we've been waiting on the return of Willie for, you know, weeks now. The lineup just, again, like with runners in scoring position, it's like they're allergic to scoring runs. They had the bases loaded, nobody out. And Rafaela, who, again, has just gone completely downhill since the All-Star break, I mean, he gets a 77-mile-an-hour breaking ball right over the middle. I mean, that was a hanger. That thing was absolutely a meatball, and he swung right through it. So he strikes out, and as soon as Romy comes up, I'm like, he's going to ground to a double play. He is. Once you give away that first out, Middlebrook said the same thing. He's like, even if you ground into a double play on Rafael's at bat, you still get a run out of it. Like, striking out there is just the worst result you could get. And then sure enough, Romy comes up, tailor-made double play ball, and they get nothing from it. And you end up losing the game 2-1. If you had broken that inning open and you had scored even just two, three runs, like, you don't have to hit a grand slam, but if you'd gotten something there, the entire complexion of the game changes. But instead, they get nothing and you lose by one run again. It's just pathetic.
You know, Rafaela has just been, it's just been an adventure this year. Started off slow, heated up, like, to the point where you're like, this is a career breakout. This is a guy who might finally be hitting in the middle of the order, maybe in the two hole as a right-handed hitter. And I mean, there were comparisons, and I think everybody on the podcast was realistic a few years ago, but there were comparisons that, you know, he kind of looks like Mookie Betts in the minors, and that was kind of, you know, jumping the gun. But man, he kind of was having a Mookie-like impact for a couple months. And I don't know if falling off a cliff is even like, he's like falling out of the solar system. So, I mean, that's a big difference from when we were putting up W's all throughout the month of July and into early August. And Bregman has disappeared to the point where that's pretty concerning. And, you know, we can debate the opt-out all we want, but I'm like, I'm coughing up 40 for that for the next 2 years, possibly. Like, that's concerning. And I don't know. Duran has probably been one of your better players, but not good enough. This, I don't know what to make here. I mean, you know, I go after Breslow more than anyone, but it's like beating a dead horse. And the pitching's been very good, the starting pitching, and that's been our saving grace. But the bats have completely disappeared.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, with Alex Bregman, it's a shame to see him go 0-for-4 tonight, too, especially because he was having a little bit of a resurgence. He had a very quiet six-game hitting streak where you thought, okay, maybe this guy can start getting going tonight. Unfortunately, we cannot afford to have guys take off nights anymore. I mean, we need everyone to show up from here on out. Bregman, there's going to be a lot of discussion over, like you mentioned, the opt-out, whether it would actually be a good thing ultimately. It seems like since coming back from his injury, he has lost a step a little bit. He's either hitting for power or he's hitting for average, or he's just not hitting, you know, depending on what month it is. And when it comes to Sedan, it's the same story. I mean, you look at the start of the year, his April and May were fine, his June and July red hot, and now just ice cold. And it's very sad to see impact players lose their impact and have no one else step up to take that mantle. It was looking like Roman Anthony was happy to shoulder the burden all on his own, but now without him, it's kind of exposing what this lineup is, which is not very deep, not very good. They can beat up on bad pitchers, but when you throw real junk at them, they look lost. And during the, especially after the A's, funnily enough, scored that second run, our offense looked lost.
Yeah, and I'm done hearing about all the lefty killers that you have, because this lineup, frankly, is starting to suck against left-handed pitching. And if Ref Snyder and Romy don't give you anything, the rest of the lineup is garbage against left-handed pitching. Duran doesn't play well against lefties. We know Abreu, even though he hasn't been in it for a while, he doesn't play well against lefties. They struggle. They really do. So, and again, yeah, losing Roman Anthony was a big part of that, because he did hit well against lefties. Like, he could do, you know, both sides. So, yeah, the whole lefty killer thing, that myth is now officially dead, because if it's not Romy and Ref Snyder hitting 450-foot bombs, they are completely lifeless against left-handed pitching. And Jeffrey Springs is like a crafty lefty, but he's a guy you should beat. He's a guy you've seen before. He's been in the American League for a while here. He was with Tampa for a while. So, like, you've seen this guy. You know what he is. He doesn't throw hard. You should be able to jump on a guy like that. And they barely squeak by one run, and that's because they have Lawrence Butler playing center field, and he's atrocious out there. That's the only reason you scored. Is because the Athletics were stupid for, you know, a half second. Otherwise, you would have been shut out. And I agree with Terry, like, they deserve to get shut out, because that's what it felt like. Once they had that 1-0 lead, I was like, they're not holding on to this. They're not. It's not enough. You should be putting up 4 or 5 runs against a team like this. And the fact that you're not, and we might be heading into a scenario where hopefully we're playing October baseball, like, you go up against much better teams, one run's not going to cut it. And if you can't score off of Jeffrey Springs and the Athletics pitching staff, you're not going to be able to score against any playoff team's pitching staff, that's for sure.
I was thinking, you know, you gave up those runs in what, the sixth? I'll pull it up right now.
Yeah, it was the top of the sixth inning. Yep.
Yes, the sixth. So I'm like, you just get through this inning. Then you get through the seventh and you're good. You've got your lights out, guys. And I know Chapman, you know, got knocked around, but that was just an off game. Just didn't have control. And, you know, so I was starting to think we could win it with just one run, but, you know, and then I don't know if Early was pulled too soon. I don't really have strong feelings one way or the other on that, but then Weissert comes in. But who do you trust? I mean, if not Weissert, who?
Yeah, I mean, if you have to go away from Early, I mean, I wouldn't hate giving Slayton a go, you know, see him in a little bit of a higher leverage situation where, you know, a runner's on base. Okay, go get him. He only needs to get two outs in that situation. I mean, it's true that Weissert has been good by the numbers, but the ERA, like you mentioned before, Jason, you don't have your ERA inflate from inherited runners scored. Unfortunately, you're just doing a disservice to the guy that came before you. So, you know, I'm sure there must be better options, you know, because we know Weissert's not the answer. Maybe Kelly, who looked good tonight, maybe Slayton, maybe anyone who isn't, you know, consistently shaky with a guy on first base.
And that's where I go to their analytics department, because we know that they're huge on analytics. Find the guy who has the best numbers against inherited runners, because it's not Greg Weissert. I promise you it's not him. Now, I don't know how good Slayton's numbers are there. I don't know how good Zach Kelly's numbers are or Justin Wilson. And I know, you know, they had the two righties coming up, but there's got to be someone better than Greg friggin' Weissert with guys on base. It's got to be at least one pitcher in your bullpen that's better than that. And, like, you know, I know they don't want to use Whitlock that early, but in a tight game, why not? You had the off day yesterday. He should be good to go. Do you want to win the game or not? Or do you want to just stick to your stupid plan where Whitlock can only pitch the eighth inning and you can't put him in a high leverage situation earlier than that? It just felt like Cora just had it in his mind. Like, Early's going to go this long and then it's going to be Weissert. And like, that was just, he had that planned out and he didn't deviate from it. He just stuck to it. He didn't feel out the game. He didn't feel out, well, if I put in Weissert, is Kotze going to put in one of his lefty bats off the bench? Like, he had no feel for it. He just, nope. Early's going 80 pitches. We're pulling him out and we're putting Weissert in because he's been good and he's got an ERA under 3, so he should be fine. Like, no feel for the game tonight from Cora. Just, it was tight. The team was, you know, offensively was struggling. Like, that's where you bring out your best pitchers, no matter what inning it is. I would have been fine if he brought out Whitlock with a runner on, like, just, yep, just get the outs and we'll figure out the rest of it later. But instead he goes to the predictable Greg Weissert and we get a predictable result once again.
It just feels like when you look at Weissert's numbers, they're not bad, but it feels like they should be way worse. And the best pitcher we've had all year with inherited runners is Brennan Bernardino, but he's hurt. So I don't know who you have. Maybe you could have went to Matz a little sooner and then maybe given Weissert or Zach Kelly a clean inning. Kelly's looked okay. A lot of people give him flack. And coming into the season, I was a big Zach Kelly guy. I mean, he was fairly solid last year, and then he just – even as early as spring training this year, he just didn't have it. And that carried into April and he was just atrocious, but he's been good. Justin Slayton, I think I actually trust Zach Kelly right now more than Slayton. Honestly, I was a big Slayton guy coming into this season too. And it's getting to the point where I'm like, maybe Slayton's just not that good. Maybe he just had a nice 3-month run early last year and we thought we hit on something, could possibly have a controllable late inning guy, but I don't know. He hasn't been able to consistently get it done. And when he comes into the game, I don't have a ton of confidence.
Yeah, I think coming back from that injury, he's lost a bit of a step for sure, because he was pretty decent, you know, at the start of the year. Certainly not what we were hoping for. I know him and Whitlock both were sort of trading off stinkers back in the early season. But overall, you know, I felt like his numbers were pretty solid. I do agree that probably I would prefer a Justin Slayton in a situation like that, if we're talking about May, maybe then September, just with how his season has progressed. But I do still hold out hope that, you know, he'll be able to hopefully progress beyond this. I actually just pulled it up. In his career, he has only inherited 24 runners and allowed four of them to score. It seems like a decent enough ratio. I'm not sure what the league average is on that. But no, you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, we can nitpick the pitching and whatnot, but I mean, a 2-1 loss, it's firmly on the bats. You just have to figure out ways to score, especially when you're going to load the bases. And it's frustrating to watch the Red Sox. We're running all over the base paths, you know, stealing bases, getting caught stealing, picked off, all of this. You have to give them kudos for trying to manufacture runs, but you also have to give them some flack for not manufacturing those runs. Because it's just, it's really sad to see this lineup is right now devoid of all power. We are a small ball team. And unfortunately, not only are we a small ball team, we're a small ball team that's not actually all that good at playing small ball.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. You're right that they have zero power in this lineup right now. And I know Abreu coming back, he's got some pop, but who knows how, he's probably not 100%. Like, I think he's trying to rush back and help out as much as he can, but he's not 100%. Bregman, you know, has power, but he's been really down lately. Yeah, they are. They're a small ball team that sucks at playing small ball. It's unbelievable. Like, they got some guys who can run. I mean, Trevor Story, that was a great milestone for him tonight to, you know, 30 straight consecutive stolen base without getting caught. That's a good club to join. Good for him. He's your best offensive player, which is crazy to say. I never thought, if you'd asked me in April, you know, like, who's going to be the best Red Sox offensive player, I would have named like seven or eight guys before I named Trevor Story. But here we are. That's where we are. And, you know, you can't do it against the Athletics. You know, you got 11 games left, two more against them. Then you got Tampa, Toronto, Detroit. Good pitching, good pitching, good pitching. So if you can't do it against the Athletics, what makes you think you're going to be able to do it against those three teams to close out the season? And if you can't score runs and you start losing these, you know, 3-2, 2-1, 2-0 games, you're going to drop out of that third wild card quick, because Cleveland is red hot. Texas is not going to, they're not going to go lying down. So they got to be really careful here. And I think that's why it was smart for Cora, and I think warranted over the weekend, for him to say, look, you know, we got to stop talking about, you know, playing in October. We got to clean up some stuff right here, right now first, before we can even start talking about playing October baseball. And he's right. And tonight was a perfect example of it. Runners in scoring position, you know, getting those key hits at key times, you know, striking out too much. Like, these are all issues they need to fix right now. And they've only got 11 games to do it. So, you know, I know they're still hanging on to the wild card now, and that's fine. But it can slip away from them real quick if this offense continues to just be anemic. And I don't know. I don't know if they can fix it in time. It's looking pretty rough.
I mean, if you're Alex Cora, I mean, I don't know if he's left the ballpark yet, but eventually he leaves the ballpark, probably has at least a 30 to 45 minute drive home. What are you thinking right now about your organization? Like, what can you do? What are the solutions at this point?
It's a good question. I mean, ultimately, a manager only has so much control. And I did disagree with a lot of his decisions over the course of this year, over the course of his career, really. I think that post-2018, Alex Cora has not been a very impressive manager. And I think in 2018, a Gerbil probably could have won the World Series with that roster, you know, just playing so right. You know, I think more than anything, I give credit to 2018 to Dave Dombrowski for having the feel to bring in guys like Eovaldi and Kinsler, and especially Pierce at the deadline, which really moved the needle, sent us over the top. When it comes to this roster, I mean, you have a lineup of guys who you have to hope are ready for these games. I don't know what the hitting coach is doing right now. What is Fatsy doing? I mean, what adjustments are being made? Because a lot of these guys, they look lost up there. It's really sad to see. When it comes to Cora, I mean, part of me pities him as much as I'm frustrated with him, because it's kind of a bad situation to find yourself in. You're down the stretch, you're looking around, and you're surrounded by guys who just aren't getting the job done. And at the end of the day, that's going to reflect on you no matter what.
I think Cora's probably just thinking to himself, all he can do is fill out the lineup card with the best available options that he has, which is limited at the moment because of injuries and whatnot. And he's just got to hope these guys step it up, because, you know, it's a young team, but there's veterans on here too that should be pulling more weight. I mean, Alex Bregman, I'm sorry, but for a guy who only cares about winning to intentionally leak stuff about his contract to Jeff Passan and then to suck for the next couple weeks after that, like, come on, dude. Like, where is your mind really at? Jaron Duran, at this point, I consider a veteran. Had a breakout year last year. This year, you know, very ineffective for the most part. You know, your catching situation is what it is. Like, I just think Cora's, you know, kind of at a loss. And he's looking at Breslow going, you got me nothing at the trade deadline. You got me no reinforcements on the offensive side. You went out and got a suck pitcher and a, you know, okay middle reliever. And that was it. Like, he's had to rely on guys like Nate Eaton, who was like a minor league deal at the beginning of the year, a guy that, you know, I thought we'd see in spring training and then never see again. And he's having to play important games for you in September. And I know, yeah, there's injuries, but that's depth too. The really good playoff teams have guys on their benches that could start for other major league teams. But that's what you do. You build with depth, and the Red Sox just did not do that. So now they're having to rely on guys like Nate Eaton, like Romy Gonzalez, like Rob Refsnyder to pull them out of this rut, and they're just not qualified to do it. So Cora's probably just thinking to himself, I hope Bregman decides to wake up and actually play like he, you know, is worth $40 million, because he hasn't been. You know, I hope that Sidon Rafael learns how to hit a baseball again at some point here in the next week or so, because, yeah, he's great defensively, but he looks like he's just a no-show at the plate. That's all he can really do. And I think at this point, if, and obviously we don't hope for this to happen, but if they do collapse here, and if they do lose this wild card spot and they don't make the playoffs, and it's because of this kind of stretch, I don't think Cora is going to be the guy that's going to get the most share of the blame pie, if you will. It's going to be Breslow, and it's going to be the players. Because what the hell happened to you guys in September? You were shooting for the division, as Nick said at the start of the show. Like, we were looking at Toronto going, yeah, we can take them. We can take them. We're not scared of them. And then it's like, okay, no, we can't take them. But first wild card, that's good. We'll take the first wild card because we're a great home team, right? We play awesome at Fenway, and then we start losing games at Fenway, and we go, can we just have the third one? Maybe just a third wild card, please? Can we just hold on to that? And now who knows? A week from now, we might be out of it. So I don't think Cora's too worried. His job is safe. He's done, I think, everything he can. It's on the players and it's on Breslow. He didn't get enough of the deadline, and they haven't done enough here down the stretch.
I mentioned last night how a week ago, maybe 8 or 9 days ago, I don't know exactly, but the Red Sox had, according to FanGraphs, a 95% chance to get into the playoffs. Now, I don't think it's dropped drastically. It's probably 75 to 80% right now, but if we miss and that type of stuff gets brought up, there's going to be a firestorm, I would say. Like, the media is just going to come down brutally on the Red Sox. And I don't know. I mean, you look ahead to next year, some fans will probably give up their season tickets. It's just, this could be ugly. And I, you know, I raised the question last night. I'm like, you know, does Breslow survive this? He's extremely unlikable in that front office. Nobody likes him. He's got no friends. His performance at the trade deadline sucked. I was just looking at Nathaniel Lau. In the last week, he's hitting exactly 100 with 182 on base with a 100 slugging. If you go back 2 weeks, it's 205 with a 271, but that's a guy who's trending the wrong way. And he's got one more year of control left. So he could have been auditioning for maybe to be picked up this winter, but the Red Sox will probably non-tender him. That's what can happen to, you know, the arbitration eligible guys. They don't get DFA'd necessarily. They can get non-tendered. So that's not going well. And I mean, Matz has been okay, but I'm not going to say you didn't need a reliever. I guess you always do, but nothing got done. As soon as opening day started, the roster was the roster. And then Devers got traded and none of the big three survived the season for various reasons. Too many eggs in that basket.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting, you know, at the end of the year, once all the wins and losses are tallied up, to ask ourselves, did we win more games without Rafael Devers than we would have with him? You know, it's a question that we asked the day that statement was uttered. We said this has potential to really, really blow up. You know, that's not the type of thing you say out loud because you're jinxing yourself. And sure enough, people keep those receipts. And it is looking like Craig Breslow is going to have to come out and cash that check. You know, when it comes to Alex Cora and the rest of these guys, I mean, no one wants to be the Atlanta Falcons at the end of the day. When the computer tells you that it's yours to win, you better win it. 99%, like you said, to make the postseason, according to both Baseball Reference and I believe FanGraphs. If it wasn't, then it was very, very close. 95 plus, I imagine. I mean, this team, not only was it a near guarantee to make the playoffs, I believe at one point it was predicting over 10% on Baseball Reference to win the World Series. And I don't put a lot of stock in any, you know, algorithm like that. I think that's a little silly, but it goes to show just how good a position we were in on paper and how, I guess, we're sort of on a balancing beam now. You know, the stage is getting narrower and narrower, and we're just trying not to fall off the edge. And we are getting very close to doing so. I mean, like we mentioned, assuming the Astros win it along with Seattle, which I believe they are going to. I mean, we're down to the third wild card spot. Should be about 2.5 games, maybe 3, over the Guardians and the Rangers, but it's just not an enviable position to be in because those teams, well, maybe not so much the Guardians, but the Rangers, are red hot. And sure, they need to play excellent baseball and we just need to tread water. But if we're only scoring one run a game, treading water is not going to be the outcome. You're going to lose. And it's a shame, you know, watching guys like Bregman take their OPS from over 900 to over 800. And at the end of the season, it'll probably, or possibly, I should say, be down below 800 to the 790s, 780s, who knows, depending on how this stretch goes. It's just disheartening because you need guys to step up, and instead, a lot of ours are falling down.
And the dangerous thing about trying to tread water, as you mentioned, is that even if you do hang on to that wild card spot, you're kind of limping into playoff baseball, and you're facing teams that, frankly, have played better than you for over a month, and you're going to be sort of limping in, like just barely holding on. And now you got to win a 3-game series. And yeah, sure, you feel good about Crochet, you know, starting that first game. What if you don't win the Crochet start? You know, like you're down 0-1 and you got to rely on either Giolito or Bayo to, you know, deliver a great playoff performance. And maybe they're capable of that, but if your offense is still not doing anything, they better be perfect. And, you know, that's the thing. Like, when the offense gets like this and they're squeezing the bats, the starting pitchers are squeezing the baseballs because they're out there going, I can't mess up. Like, I can't give up a two-run homer because that might just be the end of the game. Like, it puts a lot more pressure on everybody because same with the relievers. Relievers go into the game going, I can't mess this up. Like, we've only got a one-run lead. Like, I need to get three outs here. I need to basically have an immaculate inning if I can do it. Because if I screw up, the offense isn't going to come back. So it just makes everything tighter. And it just, that's not where you want to be. You don't want to feel tight when you're already in a wild card position. You know, the Guardians should be feeling tight. The Rangers should be feeling tight because they're chasing it. You're not. You're in it. So you should be in a position where, hey, we got the Athletics for three games. Let's take two of three, right? And maybe they still will. But your attitude should be, we've been better than this team all year. We should be able to sweep them, if not at the very least, take two of three. And then hopefully some other teams lose and, you know, we get a stronger wild card position, whatever. But that's not the way they feel right now. They feel like nervous going into every game. Like, in every at bat, it's just like, oh man, like, we got to get this right. We got to win this game or we're screwed. Like, the team just doesn't feel right. They don't feel like a playoff team. So even if they do scrape by here and they limp their way in, they're going to be a very vulnerable playoff team. And I certainly wouldn't feel good about going into a three-game series, especially if it's on the road at this point.
Well, if we slip down to sixth, so the last wild card, essentially, we'll probably end up playing, I think, Seattle, in Seattle. So I don't know how I feel about that. They can pitch, too, which might be all you need to beat us, quite frankly. But you look at all three aspects of the team, the lineup, the rotation and the bullpen, they all have glaring issues. Like, not one of them, well, I guess the rotation's okay, but not great. I mean, your 4 and 5 spots are unsettled, but the bullpen you don't feel good about before the eighth inning. Your lineup you don't feel good about at all, really. I mean, where's everything coming from? So, yeah, I wouldn't feel good about a deep October at all. And, I mean, imagine flying all the way out to Seattle. Thought you were done with West Coast stuff, but, you know, you end up in Seattle. You've got Kirby. You got Gilbert. Just a really good rotation there. And they made moves at the deadline. They wheeled and dealed. They got the guy you should have got. Eugenio Suarez. So we're lucky that we're still in it at this very moment.
Most definitely. And it's just going to be a damn shame if we do get in. I mean, Baseball Reference, not counting today's results yet in the algorithm, but still has us at a 92.5% chance to make the postseason. I guess on paper, having a 2.5-game lead in the wild card, that's pretty hard to lose this late in the season. But if anyone can do it, I have faith in us, you know? And if we make it into the postseason, and we decide to put Garrett Crochet out there on the mound with Nick Sogard and Nate Eaton behind him, then you're counting on those guys to step up and deliver some crazy heroics. And even if they do, I mean, strangely enough, Sogard did get on base twice tonight. You know, Eaton got a hit. So even if they do, you're also kind of counting on Bregman to show up. You're counting on Romy to put up a good game. You're counting on Duran to prove who he is. Hopefully Willier comes back and doesn't need games to adjust. Hopefully Yoshida's not there at all. And it's just a bad situation where you're counting on so many things to go right that anytime something goes wrong, it feels impossible to overcome.
And yeah, it feels like it's too late for anyone to really take that step and like go on a real hot streak and kind of like charge them into the playoffs. Kind of like, oh, I don't know, Rafael Devers has been doing in the month of September with the Giants. He's been pretty much dragging them to that wild card race. Now, will they get in? I don't know. I think they're still a couple games out. We'll see. But you don't have that guy. It was Roman Anthony, right? He was driving your offense, but you're not going to have him. No one else has been doing it in September. Bregman's gone cold. Rafael has gone cold. Duran is hit or miss. Abreu's been hurt for most of it. So who knows what he's going to look like when he gets back, right? He, you know, hasn't seen live MLB pitching in quite a few weeks. Narvaez is exhausted. He can't do it anymore. And then, yeah, it's like Nate Eaton, Nick Sogard. Like, these are the kind of guys I remember, like, every time the Rays would make the playoffs and they, like, pull one of these guys off their bench, I'm like, who the hell is that? I've never heard of this guy in my life. Like, that's who we are. We are the Rays this year. And people don't want to accept that, but it's true. It's what Nick said earlier in the show. They're a small ball team, but they suck at playing small ball. And that's just not a good recipe. So it's going to be tough. Like, unless, you know, someone dope slaps Alex Bregman on the back of the head and wakes him up and he plays like he did in April, I just don't see how you're going to get that driving force to get the offense to wake up here. I don't know. And look, sometimes the calendar flips and playoff baseball starts and guys, you know, they show their true form, right? Because, you know, other guys, it goes backwards, right? Mookie Betts turns into a pumpkin whenever the calendar flips to October. So maybe someone like Sadon, who, you know, is a fiery player with a high motor, maybe you get him in a playoff setting and all of a sudden he's hitting bombs again. And, you know, he's looking like the player he was leading up to the All-Star break. That can still happen. But relying on that is dangerous. It's really a dangerous way to go. So, yeah, I just, with this amount of time left, I just don't see how you're going to get that lift.
I was just looking at the tiebreaker. So we do not have the tiebreaker against Texas. If you tie them, we're out. If it's Cleveland, you do have the tiebreaker. I think we were 4-6 against them or something like that. 1-4 out of 6. So I don't know, but right now you're 500. You're batting 500 against the Oakland A's. And then you got Tampa. I have no idea what to expect there. And you're going to be playing down in that minor league stadium. I don't know how that's going to go. Garrett Crochet will pitch the first game of that series. So I guess that's good. I don't know how the rotation is going to shake out because of how we worked it this time through with the off day. Let's see. Giolito. Let's see. Giolito and Bayo won't be available in that. So you're going to have maybe Connolly early. I don't love that situation for him. Not that Tampa's scary, but you know, you could be just a little bit off and the balls start going over the fence. That's not going to be good for him. You might have a Peyton Tolle start in there. I don't know who your fifth starter is. I guess it could be Harrison. You could go that route, but it's nothing you feel good about.
Yeah. You know, it's just infuriating in a lot of ways. You know, Will Graham on Twitter, I see in our comments, say they would have won more games with Devers. Imagine him protecting Roman in the lineup. I think that's absolutely true. And it's possible, I mean, I don't want to speculate, but it's possible that Roman wouldn't have hurt his back from carrying the entire team. You know, if you're a Boston sports fan across the board, you got to just condemn injuries at this point because we lost Jason Tatum, you know, Christian Gonzalez, Roman Anthony. Just give me a break here, man. Give me a healthy season, please. It's just frustrating to watch. And, you know, I agree with Connolly early, you know, being a bit of a question mark, I guess, in that Rays series. Like you mentioned, the Little League ballpark. I mean, maybe he's used to it, playing in the minors up until now. Maybe he hasn't fully adjusted. Tolley and Harrison could maybe piggyback a start. I don't hate that entirely. But you just are praying for good matchups. You know, I'm not entirely sure what the Rays rotation looks like right now, if it's filthy or not. You got to hope that they just send out some bad pitchers that can make our offense look good. Because if we aren't scoring five runs, I don't like our chances.
Yeah, the Rays, they did trade away Taj Bradley, who was one of their better young pitchers. They gave him to Minnesota at the deadline. But right now, at least if ESPN has it right, they've got Tampa Bay sending out Rasmussen, Hauser, and Pepiot for that series. Pepiot's their ace. He's their best pitcher by far. Rasmussen's pretty good, and Hauser's, and he's okay. He's bounced around a little bit, veteran guy. But yeah, I don't feel great playing down in that stadium. You know, they call it the boombox for a reason. Junior Caminero is having an incredible year for them. Like, he could single-handedly wreck that series for you. So it's tough. And look, when you lose games like this to a team like the Athletics, you look ahead to those other games and you feel just so much worse about it. So yeah, like the pitching, you know, you'll have Crochet in there. That's good. But, you know, we're not sure if it is going to be Connelly early, if Peyton Tolley is going to get a start. Like, that uncertainty when you're kind of fighting for your lives here just really doesn't help. And it, as I said earlier, just makes everyone tighter and more nervous going into every single game. There's not a confident feeling around this team right now. It's a huge problem.
I thought that Crochet had actually gotten torched down there in Tampa, but I guess I'm wrong. Let's see. He actually doesn't look like he's even pitched in that stadium, so I must be mixing him up with someone else. But we got Giolito tomorrow. How do we feel about that?
You know, I'm feeling pretty good. We've got Mason Barnett on the mound for the Rays. Who knows? You know, he's going to roll out and get the start. We'll see how deep he goes into that game. He hasn't had an impressive season so far. I mean, you look at three starts, 12.2 innings, and 8.53 ERA. If there's anyone we're going to shell, hopefully it's this guy. Hopefully that's not just bad luck on his part. I mean, he's given up 18 hits and six walks in that same span. His whip is close to 1.9. I got to feel good about Giolito in that matchup.
Yeah, I agree. I feel pretty good about Giolito going tomorrow. Mason Barnett, he's had a tough go of it. Hasn't started many games for Oakland this year, but he's rough. And he's faced the Red Sox before. He only went like 3 2/3, gave up a couple runs. So I think he's a guy they can get to. Now, what the lineup's going to look like, I have no idea. Because I think it sounds like Cora said in his postgame that Abreu will not be suiting up tomorrow. So you're not going to get Abreu. You're probably going to get Yoshida at DH because you have to, I guess. I don't know if they'll give Narvaez a blow as well. So that might mean Connor Wong is in the lineup. So look, I know people complain when other people like us complain about the lineup card, but given your offensive struggles, the lineup card really matters in a game like this that you should win against a bad pitcher. And I don't know. I just feel like Cora's going to do something weird with like Yoshida hitting second or something because he has to get him going or, you know, whatever. Like, that's what makes me nervous. So we'll see what kind of lineup we got. But I still feel good, especially with Giolito pitching on our side, that you should win this game tomorrow. There's no excuses.
I have the Red Sox winning the game. You know, Giolito's looked pretty good, I think, in two of his last three. So we'll see. Mason Barnett, I mean, he survived. That was the game we won in the last series in the finale. You know, he kind of survived through, what, 3 2/3? And then, you know, Chapman ended up imploding later on in the game. But let's see. The Bayo, I don't know anything about Ginn, JT Ginn or whatever his name is. But I don't know. Bayo's been pretty solid. It's hard to really pick against the Red Sox these last two games. So if they blow it, if they just don't show up offensively, shame on them.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes to Ginn or Chin, I'm not sure how he says it. The only thing I know about him is that his numbers aren't very good, especially not lately. He had a really brutal August. He's been all right so far in his two starts in September. But, I mean, this is another guy who you have no excuse to not hit against. Bayo's the guy. You got to hope that he and Giolito can hopefully put up some really solid starts against this this A's lineup, Sacramento. And the bats wake up and beat up pitchers that they really should beat up.
I think there's a slight chance, probably not tomorrow, apparently, because Abreu won't be activated, but slight chance Yoshida gets DFA'd. I mean, you're not trading him. Nobody's calling this winter. Hey, Breslow, I think Yoshida might have a good year next year. What do you want? That's not happening. That is not happening. You blew it. You traded Devers. You put Yoshida in there at DH, hoping maybe he would have a surprisingly good season, and then maybe you could move him for most of the money. Well, it got way worse as far as Yoshida goes. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the move. Who do you want to take off this team if it's not Yoshida? You could option Eaton. I mean, that's not gonna be consequential. Pathetically, he is one of your best hitters right now. Shouldn't be, but he is. So we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, Nate Eaton's more valuable than Yoshida at this point. So I could even argue Nick Sogard is more valuable than Yoshida at this point, just because of his defense and everything else. So yeah, like I think it'd probably be someone like a Sogard who would get sent back down. That's probably what they're gonna do. But I'd have no issues, no qualms at all if they decide to DFA Yoshida either tomorrow or Thursday. I'm done. I tried to defend him at the beginning of the season. So, you know, let's let him get healthy, let's let him get used to, you know, the schedule over here is different than Japan. Okay, fine. No. I can't do the weak ground ball to second base anymore. I can't do it. So I'm done. They want to DFA him, fine by me.
Yeah, I'm in the complete same boat. I mean, at this point, maybe just give him another phantom IL stint, send him to the same summer camp that Dustin May is resting at. And, you know, hopefully, I don't know. I don't know if you find someone stupid enough to at least take 10% of his contract in the offseason or what, but something has to be done because this dude just does not fit into what this team is. And it's hard to say that he'll fit into any team, quite frankly. He struggles to play the field. He struggles to hit now. I mean, you can't have a DH who can't hit. That's one of the letters in the acronym.
No shot he makes the roster next year. So you DFA him, maybe it energizes the team. You know, maybe, you know, Yoshida's gone, Abreu's back. I don't know. I see nothing but upside either way.
At this point, hopefully we can just get some energy drinks in the clubhouse because we need something. We need something to change things up and give these guys a bit of a fresh look because it's getting too late to have another chance.
I saw Crochet sipping a Red Bull. He wasn't pitching that day. I'm like, man, give who's on deck right now? Go let him have a sip.
Absolutely. I think that just about sums it up. Any closing thoughts, guys? All righty. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Hopefully tomorrow we can get ourselves evened up in this series in position to win it. Certainly taking 2 out of 3 would that make us feel a little bit good heading into the Rays series. We just need more from the hitters, as we said on and on. I've been Nick, joined by Terry and Jason. We have been the Bastards of Boston. Thank you so much for listening, watching, commenting. We do appreciate it. Let's go Red Sox. Hopefully win tomorrow.
Power up fall projects with Ego at Lowe's. Every tool delivers power beyond belief. So whether it's leaves, limbs, or lawn cleanup, count on Ego to deliver the power, performance, and innovation you need. And now for a limited time, save up to $60 on select blowers, chainsaws, and pole saws. Shop Ego today at Lowe's. Offers valid through 10-1 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.